straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 181, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our good friends at Bud Light. My name is Cedric Golden, and you know who I'm joined by, the one and only Kirk Bowles. A lot of people know him as the Duck. And Duck, we got a special guest coming up later, and a UT football player from the 2005 championship team, Selvin Young. But first, let's talk a little bit about the hope factor. It just feels like the world is starting to warm up to the idea of sports coming back real soon. Am I right on that, or are we pushing it a little bit too fast?
Well, I always worry that we may be reopening too fast. And I had an interesting interview with A&M athletic director Ross Bourque last week. And he said, you know, none of this is etched in stone, you know. I mean, A&M's planning on having fall classes in the classroom. But, you know, that could change in a week, you know. So I just think nothing's etched in stone. Everything is tentative. I think you're right in that I don't know if it's too soon, but we want it so bad. I think that's a driving factor in all this.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, last week talking to Richard Justice, and it just feels like baseball's coming back in July. And live sports is the truest sense of Americana. We love the teams that we watch. We have our heroes. And yeah, but the safety issue has to be first and foremost, Duck. And I'm a dreamer and by nature, but I also am pretty pragmatic when it comes to let's take care of business first before pleasure. And our country, sports is pleasure. Now, we're unique. It's a little bit of both for us. It's how we feed our families and how we pay bills. But, man, I just feel like a second wave is going to come, and I just want people to be just a lot more cautious. I'm seeing a lot of people out in public with no masks on, Duck, and they feel like this thing's behind us, and I just don't believe that.
And I don't understand that. I don't see any problem with, you know, making it mandatory you have masks. You know, if you're going to, you know, end or ease the stay-at-home order, make people wear masks until we have a greater degree of confidence that it is safe.
Monetary penalties.
Yeah. That, I mean, you have to, or just say, have the police pull them over and say, do you have a mask? No. Well, then you need to drive home. You know, it's just the safety and health and well-being of Americans has to be the number one agenda. And that doesn't mean we're blind to the economy. We know how people are suffering. And, you know, there may be 36 million people unemployed, maybe 25% of the workforce in this country, and that's not sustainable. We know that, but safety's got to be tops on the agenda.
People got to get back to work, man. They got to get back to work. We got to make money. I understand that it's business, and you know, people like us, we can't live on stimulus checks. We want paychecks, and I understand it. We did a thing in the paper last week called our you know, we do our little take 10. And one of the questions on there I liked, who would have won the NCAA tournament? Who would have won the Masters, and who would have won Wimbledon? What do you remember putting?
Well, I remember going with Dayton beating Gonzaga in the finals, and that really wouldn't have been an upset. I mean, the Flyers were, I think, 29-2. And the only two losses were in overtime. One of those was to Kansas, which would have been another number one seed. So that was my winner. I had the Joker winning Wimbledon again.
So predictable.
And, oh, well, I want to hear who you picked. I want our audience to hear. And then I picked Rory McIlroy to win the Masters. He hadn't won it yet. He needs that for the career Grand Slam. And I think, you know, if they play that in November, or if they would have played it then, I think, you know, he's had a bunch of top 10 and top 5 finishes there. So I went with Rory over Bubba Watson. So tell the audience who you picked.
You know, Bubba only shows up in Augusta. So
yeah, he's twice.
Yeah, I picked Joker to win Wimbledon. Here's the thing: Federer and Nadal have gotten old, and Andy Murray is playing on one hip. So I just, you know, the guys that could have tested him just. Nah, I noticed that you left out your women's singles because you don't watch women's sports. You don't like women's sports as much as I do. So I took Ash Barty from Australia to win the women. Wow. So and in the Masters, I took Matt Kuchar to win. He's like 17th in the world. He would have gotten the money, and I don't know if he would have shared it with his caddy, but he would have gotten that
probably
money.
Not.
So, is this the year you let me go to the Masters? You noticed I took a shot at you in the column.
Yeah, probably not. You know, I mean, you know, I'm old. How much time do I have left?
Selfish.
So, you don't even like golf. I mean, when's the last time you were on a golf course?
I love golf.
Was the last time you set foot on a golf course?
Was the Dell last year?
Well, yeah, that was like, 15 months ago.
And the last time you stepped foot on a golf course was probably the Masters last year. So stop it.
I'm hoping to be at the Colonial, but they said they're going to have a limited number of media for the Colonial in Fort Worth, and I think it starts June 11th. So I forgot, who was your NCAA tournament winner?
I took KU. Remember when Bill...
You went chalk down the road, dog.
There's a reason.
Joker. Who'd you pick to win the Masters? Tiger?
Matt Kuchar, 17th in the world. That wasn't Shaw.
He's not going to win. He never wins the Masters.
Neither does Rory, and you picked him. So
yeah. So I saw on the paper last week you were taking a shot at my baseball and say it's too soon. you want us to bring back, you want hope, then you douse all this water on baseball.
Because
why are you so negative?
I got to be real, dog. I've got to be real. I've got to give them the real truth as I see it. Baseball, I know that's your sport. I know you love you some baseball. Old men in America love baseball. My dad loved baseball. He's dead, but he loved baseball.
What are you saying?
That's what the men... this is why baseball is going to make a big comeback. And I wish I had written this in the column because arguing with you always brings my best thoughts to the surface. Baseball is going to make a comeback because that's what people did in the Depression era. When our parents grew up, baseball was number one and boxing was number two. So horse racing. Baseball and boxing are making a big comeback because of this pandemic.
Let me ask you that question then. You raise a good point. So say baseball does come back in July, plays their 82-game schedule, plays that expanded playoff, as Richard Justice told us in the podcast. Does that mean baseball's back? Is that sustainable, or are we starting to breed another generation of baseball fans? Is that what you're saying?
No, but I'm saying for the time being, baseball is going to be front and center. And like Richard told us, it's a chance for the sport to grow itself. They don't want to mess this up with some kind of work stoppage or some stuff like that. There are going to be people glued to those TV sets watching real American athletes play a real American, true American sport. And they're going to be in love with it for maybe 2 or 3 months until football season starts.
So you're saying it's a Band-Aid sport. That's what you're saying. So
I can't
believe you need baseball like that. That's so sad.
Do you really want me to talk about my up and down love affair with the game of baseball?
Not really.
Okay, because really. I know I've said it before. 1994 ended it for me with baseball. And I've only paid since 94. I grew up when I was in college and early adulthood. I went to Texas Ranger games like 3 or 4 a year. And that's a lot for a fan.
That's been 26 years. You got to get over it and move on eventually. Why are you holding a grudge against baseball?
Number one, I'm holding a grudge against baseball because baseball showed that it didn't really care about the fans. They kept saying it was all about the fans, Duck. It wasn't about the fans. No. It was about the money. And in 1994, Matt Williams had 40 home runs at the break. Juan Gonzalez had 100 RBIs at the break. The Montreal Expos were the best team in baseball. Tony Gwynn was hitting 400. Duck, it was one of the best baseball seasons ever, and I was riveted. And then they canceled the season, and I'm going to tell you, that's part of the reason that I don't do Fantasy League baseball. I cover it when I have to for a living, but I'm not going to give it any of my personal time because baseball, Duck, baseball broke my heart.
26 years ago. Haven't you ever heard that song, How Do You Mend a Broken Heart by the Bee Gees? Why do you hate that song? I mean, I can't remember the last time you went to a Major League Baseball game.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
When was it?
Well, I think it was either last year or the year before. I went to cover the Yankees-Astros, and I was down in Houston for something else. Cover the Yankees-Astros. A few years back, when Texas played at Notre Dame, we all went to Wrigley Field to watch the Cubbies play the Diamondbacks.
Wasn't that great?
That was wonderful. And then that earlier that same year, Bev and I went to Fenway Park to watch the Boston Red Sox play. Big Poppy went yard, and it was Ichiro's last game in Boston. So yeah,
I think out of the 30 ballparks, I think I've been to like 20 of them, 22, something like that. So
I haven't been to many. I've been to both Ranger ballparks. Houston Astrodome, Minute Maid.
You been to Yankee Stadium?
No, I've only been to New York twice. I've never been to Yankee Stadium. Fenway, Wrigley, the Royal Stadium. I've been there. Keith Moreland took me to a game there. So I've been to, the Jake in Cleveland I went to. So eight or nine.
Why were you at the Jake?
I visited the Jake because I was covering the Cowboys at the Cleveland Browns back when we were covering the Cowboys hot and heavy on the road. And so that was a game where Terrell Owens was still playing for the Cowboys. So I guess maybe Parcells was the coach. So that was way back in the day.
You mentioned the Cowboys. All right, here's a question on Dak Prescott, okay?
Give him his money, Duck.
They don't think he's worth $35 million or more, do they?
Who is?
Well, Aaron Rodgers is.
36-year-old Aaron Rodgers?
Patrick Mahomes is.
Okay. All right. Who else? That's it, fam. That's it. Brady's not.
I won't say Brady. Obviously not Phillip Rivers. Matt Ryan. Russell Wilson is.
Yeah, I'll go there. I like Russ. Yeah. He's proven.
I don't know why you're hating Aaron Rodgers, but here's the thing is that I think they think he's like a $30 million player. I think the Cowboys think he's not elite. I think they think there are maybe 15 quarterbacks in the league, maybe Andy Dalton, one of them.
No, stop it.
Well, I think they may think that.
No, they don't. They know Andy Dalton is not going to lead them anywhere. Stop it.
Are they going to give him $35 million or more back?
Yes, he'll get his money. He will get his money. Know. He's 26 years old, Duck. Who was a finished product at 26?
By Tom Brady.
Romo got his money. Was he a finished product when he got his money?
He's still not a finished product.
Thank
he won
you.
Two playoff games.
Dak's already won one.
I know, but I don't think they think he's elite.
I've never seen a quarterback get treated like this. A franchise quarterback at 26 years of age. Matt Ryan got his money at that age. Russ got his money at that age. A-Rod got his money at that age. Tom Brady got his money. Why can't Dak Prescott, who's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the league, a dual threat, a man who doesn't miss football games, unlike his predecessor, who couldn't even get out of the preseason, why can't Dak Prescott get his long-term security from Jerry Jones? I think it's really disrespectful.
I don't know if he's special. I think he's very good.
But wait a minute. Why does he have to be special at 26? He's 4 years from 30, Duck.
Well, I know.
John Elway didn't even win a Super Bowl till he was like 37 years old.
Yeah, only because Terrell Davis joined the team.
Thank you. So,
but isn't it they want a 4-year deal and Dak wants 5 years?
Yeah, no, those are the kind of little things that lawyers should be able to hammer out. And if you don't think he's special, you still give him the 30+ million, but you maybe in that last year lace it with some incentives to push him up. But he has no business with the numbers that he's put up over the last couple of years being a franchised guy. They need to give him his money. And if they don't think he's the leader of that team, he has shown leadership on and off the field. He's a good egg. He has the respect of the guys in the locker room. He's a great ambassador for the team and the league. Wise beyond his years, and I really, really think that they got him out there hanging on the ledge. And Dak Prescott is not as great as he will be, but they need to make sure and give him his money now. He will get his money eventually, if not with Dallas, with someone else. You're telling me that he's not a top 10, top 12 quarterback?
No, I think he's top 12, maybe. But
okay, give me eight quarterbacks that are better than Dak right now. You mentioned them: Aaron Rodgers,
Russell Wilson,
Matty Ryan,
Patrick Mahomes. You might still say Brady's better than Dak Prescott now.
Okay,
I would think.
I'm not hating. I see that.
Lamar Jackson.
No. Not yet.
He's MVP.
Not yet.
MVP's Dak one.
Well, you know what? This is a league of adjustments. Let's see what Lamar Jackson does as a follow up. This is a league where they try to take away what you did best. Let's see what Lamar Jackson does next season.
Drew Brees.
A 41-year-old Drew Brees? The Drew Brees who came in and lost the game for the Saints in the playoffs? Yeah. Is Drew even the best player on his own team anymore? I'm asking.
Are you gonna put the best Chase Edmonds special?
What about Teddy B, dog?
Slow down.
All things considered, I think Drew Brees is amazing athlete. I still would put him ahead of Dak. But we're talking 26-year-old Dak with upside. And we know that Drew Brees and Tom Brady are in the twilight of their careers. I think Aaron Rodgers still has a little bit of gas left in his tank. He's better than Phillip Rivers right now. Phillip Rivers is a turnover machine.
Right now, Matt Stafford.
I like Matt Stafford. That's a good one. But Matt Stafford's got that back now, and I wonder how he's going to be moving forward. Had he not gotten hurt, I would have won the fantasy league last year.
Daniel Jones.
Okay, now you're. Okay, let's try to color inside the line, sir. So if you're Jerry Jones, he's got to be special for you to give him the money that guys that aren't special are making.
Here's my question: if he's offering 4 years of $31 million, why is that such an insult? When you know how much is he proving himself? You know. How much is he? Oh, yeah, he's proven himself. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. Everybody's saying he's a Hall of Famer. No, nobody's saying that. $31 million a year is an insult? Please insult me. Insult me.
You're speaking from a guy who drives who doesn't drive a Benz or a Rolls. $31 million is big money. But we're talking about market value here. And the market bears that someone of Dak Prescott's ability, who started all 64 games in four seasons without missing one. Who's very good right now. You're telling me very good with the potential to be great doesn't entitle him to getting more money than most of these guys are making.
Bryce Elder is a very good college pitcher. I don't know how great he's going to be. I don't know how great Dak's going to be. You know, I never thought Tony Romo was all that. You know,
hasn't Dak played in a Pro Bowl? Am I tripping?
Has he played in eight? Why do you want to crown him already as a Hall of Famer guy, and he's one a top three quarterback?
That's the funny part right there. You nailed it right on the head. You're saying that a guy has to be a Hall of Famer to get that money.
So how many people make more than $31.5 million?
The guys we've talked about.
Yeah, I don't know. There probably aren't 15, are there?
Oh, no. But this is a game where you have to try to get your money while you can, while you're young. Because once you start the decline, and for quarterbacks, it's usually in the mid-30s if you're a guy lucky enough to play that long.
I think also in this current climate of the pandemic, you know, if you're saying, I don't want $31 million, that's not enough. Those are bad optics, I think, you know. And when people are being furloughed and people being laid off and 36 million unemployed, you know, I sure wouldn't say, well, I can't live off 31 million.
He never said he couldn't live off of it. That's the mistake some people make is they try to put entertainers in the same category with Joe Public.
Yeah, but I said he's deserving of $31 million. You're the one that wants to pay him $40 million, not me.
Did I ever say he should get $40 million a year? Did you ever see in the Austin American Statesman where I said Dak should get $40 million?
Or what are you saying? $35 million? What are you saying?
Give him 35. Give him 35, dog. Give him 35.
Yeah, and
give him 35.
$4 million, you might be able to get another lineman or pass rusher or cornerback. Be a team guy, Cedric. Swallow it. Swallow your pride and sign for $31.4 million, and then help the team.
Not everybody
broke on $31 million.
Not everybody can be Tom Brady. He took all those hometown discounts and got Super Bowls. So you have a point there.
Yeah. I appreciate your concession.
Whatever. Let's get to our guest.
On Second Thought.
Doug joining us on the phone here in the dungeon. An old-time favorite. You'll remember him from the 05 championship game, scored on that option pitch. Did VY have the knee down? Hey, that wasn't my call. It looked like a touchdown to me. So, Selvin Young is on the phone. What's up, Selvin?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How you doing today?
Man, we're great.
We're doing great. It was a touchdown, wasn't it?
Hey, we wrote it as such, and we're gonna get to what you got going on present day. But you know, when people hear Selvin Young in these parts, they light up because it takes them back to the greatest moment in program history. We talked last week, and I've got a big column on you on statesman.com. Did you really embrace how big that was at the time, or did it take you a couple of weeks after the championship for it all to settle in and what you guys had done?
You know, I think leading up to it, that summer, you know, that year before and after that Rose Bowl game, like, you know, after the game, I think, you know, that mindset that the guys had and that we had in the offensive line and that the defensive guys, I mean, we didn't even really get home good, you know, after that Michigan game before guys was kind of like, hey, you know, we're kind of going to say, you know, we want to try to make 100% attendance on everything, you know, spring all the way to the summer, all the way into that championship season. So, guys kind of started putting the work in and kind of putting, you know, challenges on themselves, like, right after that Michigan game. So, you know, for all it said, and even after it was done and everything, I think it, a lot of times I focus on and think about what we were doing to get there and be prepared for it. You know, we would tell Dog, we want this and want that, and, you know, Dog would just kind of like, yeah, I hear you talking, you know, we want to design our ring and stuff like that, and we like, you know, well, we crawling before we walk today. You know, he get us literally crawling on the field. And, you know, just thinking about that process, that's what I thought about a lot. And, you know, after that game, I mean, I know a bunch of guys, they wanted to just, like, overwhelm them. But, you know, Max is with that famous line, like, just don't let this be the greatest moment of your life. You know, be great men, great fathers, you know, great leaders in the community. And I mean, really? That right there hit us all. So, you know, hey, so many guys are doing so much in the community, you know, giving back and part of that. It was a battle all year long, and I would say, you know, for me, at the time of that Rose Bowl game, I feel like, you know, we had those guys at where we want them. You know, it's a battle. There's me, you know, it was all worth it right then and there.
Well, I know I saw you, Shelvin, I know you remember this. Right after the game, you're like right in the middle of the Rose Bowl on the field at the 50-yard line, and you are giving an ugly cry. You are bawling because it meant that much. And we kind of gave you your space, and I was like, man, because I told one of the other guys, let him have his moment. And you got up, and the first thing I said is, man, are you and your boy going to come back and do it again next year, you and Vince? And you were like, you know, we're going to be right back here. And then y'all went to Vegas and it all changed.
You know, with a guy like that, his kind of talent, you know, and performance like that back to back, I mean, he was ready for it.
He was ready, yeah.
It was another talent.
Well, what was it like playing in that atmosphere, Shelvin, with the Rose Bowl and number one versus number two, both of y'all averaging over 50 points a game and just athletes galore all over that field. Had you ever been in any atmosphere close to that, Shelvin?
I mean, not even in the NFL, you know. I mean, it was a different kind of feeling, like a long journey home, you know, kind of feeling in the NFL. Uh-huh. That game. Uh-huh. And that I felt like, you know, like warriors, like gladiators in the Coliseum. And I really felt like, you know, we were like gladiators, you know, like we're about to put on the show. And being from Texas, you know, growing up, I always had that Texas versus, you know, California, all that.
Right.
We always felt like football was played in Texas. So we kind of had that on our minds too, you know, but that atmosphere, yeah, it was definitely like, you know, like warrior-ish.
I just love what Tim Crowder said, Shelvin. He, because we met with some of the guys a few years back and on the 10-year anniversary, and Tim was like, man, we are just a bunch of country guys, so we knew we were tough. That wasn't even a question. The problem was everybody was so pissed off because USC was getting all the national love leading into that game. And so you told us, and you come out in recent years and said you and VY spent that whole week watching cartoons and avoiding ESPN because you knew what they were going to be talking about.
I mean, that's true. You know, Saturday morning football games, or when, you know, back in Little League and high school and all of that stuff. I mean, you know, wake up mid morning, watch cartoons, get you a good breakfast, and then get out there and smell that fresh grass smell. You know,
oh yeah,
it ain't made for everybody. Oh yeah, that feel, you know, to get excited about that heat, you know, you're about to go get into. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
You can see it. So, you know, just that week, all we hear, you know, on TV, I mean, even on the Spanish station, you know, it's just USC, USC, USC. And we got that many channels on the anyway, in the hotel, you know, unless we paid for a movie, which I think Cleve let us get one or two that week. it was easy, you know, to just turn on a TV and watch cartoons and you know, just feel that feeling of a kid again. I mean, we have school, we just down there for a whole week. We got the hotel, we got TV, we got work. Workout, you know, we got hotel, TV, workout. And it was perfect. You know, cartoons kind of took us away from this big battle that was brewing. you know, everyone else is trying to make it out of, like, we're about to destroy it or something, and watch.
Yeah, I think that's what USC thought. I think they thought they were going to come here and punk you guys. You know, was there a lot of trash talking during the game, Selvin?
No, not much. A few guys would say a thing or two, but I mean, it felt like a minor kind of day, like a real grown man battle. You know, guys were kind of like going after it for there.
Right.
And I mean, there was some tough right. on the other side of that. So the respect factor, you know, and I give that to the Mad Dog. You know, Mad Dog always made us respect those guys. You know, we wouldn't say, oh, this guy sucks. Yeah, right, that guy sucks. Like, I just ran 5 yards in one game or something crazy, you know, like, them guys are good. They do. Y'all are good, too, you know, and we want them guys with us in the fourth quarter, and that's when we're going to show who's really who. And, you know, that little part that, you know, I created Mad Dog for, you know, our mentality throughout the game, those battles, we're in shape, we're strong enough, we're fast enough, we're smart enough. You know, we got enough repetition on the offensive side. You know, David was just a teacher. You know, he would give us the whole thing, and, I mean, he would go back and teach us, you know, almost like, you know, like, I don't want to say elementary style, but, you know, it's just the way he reinforced it with his teaching technique. We owned everything that we would play. You know, Kelsey Keenum, the DBs, it was, we owned our stuff. So it was really about, and we knew it was about who can go longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we knew that summer we had to mm-hmm. make ourselves the best that we could be. And I mean, I wish that we had film and you guys to talk about stuff we did that summer. You know, Major Applewhite comes down and worked with Vince that summer, you know, stuff that he was dreaming and wanting the whole time. He was at Texas and he finally get that summer, you know. So many things was happening, you know. We took the key from whoever had the key to the field, you know. Texas State now, I don't know what they were called at first, but they were our, you know, summertime practice. They were our practice scout team guys, basically, you know, because they would come down to the bubble and we would get it in all night long under the light, you know, no one's out. That summer made that championship team.
It was just on a mission.
I think we were down to somebody.
Do you remember the feeling you had that instant when you knew Vince had scored the touchdown? What's going through your mind?
Well, at that instance, I instantly went to, you know, how much time we got left on the clock. I mean, I knew we kind of pushed it down there. And then I was thinking, you know, we would be going for two. So I had that on mind when, you know, we see Mac throwing it up to, you know, run the two. So my thing went straight to getting this 2-point conversion. So it was kind of a
right
quarterback draw the whole time. So it was me. I needed to get my guy. And, you know, I'll never forget that play. Lyle Sinline turns around and points at the guy. He looks at me and says, Selvin, you got that guy. I'm like, oh, okay, just tell a guy. You know?
That's what they knew, that's what they did. Him and Stutter, they would always tell him.
Yeah, you got that. I'm like, okay, well, appreciate that. I own the guy, you know, on that 2-point conversion. That's one of Matt's favorites. Play, you know, after that play, I mean, he still talks about it today. He's like, how about that 2-point conversion? You know, I was like, yep, Mac, you know, I just sacrificed to go in there. You know, it was a nice collision with me in that back. And in the end zone. So that was my favorite play of that game. That
wow. Yeah, then y'all had to sweat out the last minute or so when Liner's trying to take him down the field. What were you doing on the sidelines? Is they're trying to get back in the game and win it.
Shoot, just enjoying the defense. Yeah. You know, at that point in time, you know, we knew, hey, defense turn, and you know, now it's time for them to make a play and do their thing. And so once we scored, we knew right away, that defense was on step up. It wasn't a doubt in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Shelby, you win the game, and you guys, you know, and Texas sits atop the sporting world, and Vince announces he's leaving. You come back the next year, play well, and then you go to the Broncos. And I thought that they had found maybe the next Terrell Davis. You averaged 5 yards a carry during your NFL career, but you only had 103. How tough were those injuries, and what's your recollection, and do you have any regrets on your NFL career?
You know, my recollection on it, I mean, it felt like it was fast. You know, coming out of second and third and looking at a year running as a undrafted guy. So for me, the hard work and, you know, just the love of the game is what I still live with right now today. I'm always remember and appreciate myself for what I did to get there. You know, that journey was a long one, a tough one, but no regrets at all. You know, some things that I wish I could take back. You know, I wish I could not have to, you know, have a herniated C4-5 in my neck. You know, I wish I wouldn't. Some of these things in my hip, you know, that got shaved down, and, you know, some other things as far as, you know, I'm going to live with forever. You know, I'm probably not as mentally fast as I used to be, but I'm realizing, you know, hey, it was something that I loved and sacrificed, and I always said I was doing it for my family. It, you know, get something different from where I came from and what I saw growing up. And I think I did a good job with it. So this probably my accomplished step up.
You got your taste, and you show what you can do. Cedric, I know you remember this. Remember, he was a damn good kick returner and punt returner, too.
Well, I'm going to share. We've already talked about this, Doug, but I'm going to share this with our listeners and Selvin. Remember, so when Selvin returned a kickoff, I think it was against New Mexico State or somebody like that for a touchdown, and he was a freshman or a sophomore, and Sid B was on campus, Cedric Benson's on campus, and we're in the press box going, "There's Selvin Young." I mean, yeah. With the Jets. And so, you know, and we knew he was Vince Young's buddy. And so, long story short, and I think you probably remember this, Duck, Sid B got in a little bit of legal trouble and got arrested. And our good friend Suzanne Halliburton, who was a beat writer back then, along with myself, she had a dog, and she had such a good relationship with that dog, and she named that dog Benson. And she tried to say she named him after that butler on television, but we knew that that wasn't true. She named him after Sid B. And so after Sid B got arrested, our boss, John Bridges, who's the editor of the newspaper now, looked at both of us and said, "Man, she's going to have to rename that dog Selvin."
I do remember that.
And she didn't. He was still Benson to his dying day. So, yeah. Yeah. So we knew what we saw with Selvin early on.
What were your memories of Sid B when y'all were teammates, Selvin?
Man, you know, from my freshman year, you know, my first memory, I was a sophomore in high school, and I watched, you know, a national championship game, State Texas, a state championship game with
right.
Cedric running.
Mm-hmm.
His style, the way he was running, you know, I learned something from him, you know, that next year. I think I was the freshman I watched that next year. I ran like 2,000 yards, something like that. And I always to myself credited him for it. And so we got time.
Right.
And choose a college. I had so many offers, but Texas was there, and I really wanted to go and play. And run, you know, and learn from him and run like he ran. You know, and people are like, "Why would you go? They already got a guy. He just ran for 1,000 yards. You're probably not going to play." And I'm like, "Well,
right.
I don't think like that, you know.
Right.
And I'm going to have some fun with it. And whatever happens, happens." So, you know, my memories is how he embraced me, you know, when I got there and I was pretty good and he saw it and he knew it. And so for him, he was like, "Hey, man. Don't worry about nothing. You know, you go get yours. Like, you know, get it. Like, when every time you get the rock, go get it. You know." And we actually, you know, shared. Like, he shared everything he had with me. And I appreciate that for him, you know. And, and I'm holding it, and I'm just sitting there thinking about, you know, we live near each other. The times we riding in the car and going through the, you know, the hills and stuff like that. You know, the times where, you know, I had problems and I was talking about, you know, home life and just stuff that I was struggling with, you know, and being the person that was, like, you know, he always would know how to talk to me, basically about being a man. You know, we're in a whole nother position now in our life, you know, we're men, you know, we got to come to family and do stuff that other people weren't doing, you know, that, like, that's just what we do. And, you know, he made it so simple, and I finally caught on, you know, like, you know, hey, that's a burden for myself, I accept it. His ability to make you believe yourself was just off the, it's confident, you know, he was the most humble, confident person that I've ever experienced in my life. I'm not talking about him.
Well, it's just such a shame. He was such a special guy, and he always left it on the field, didn't he?
He sure did. He sure did.
Yeah, we're gonna miss him.
Was Selvin? I was surfing online about a couple of years ago, and then your name popped up. CNN had done a profile on you. Selvin Young is rebuilding custom food trucks in Houston, and there's a picture of you looking like brand new money in one of your custom food trucks. How did you get started in that business, and how enjoyable has that been to find a vocation after the NFL, where in an area where a lot of players like you don't always transition well after the pros?
You know, coming from a university like University of Texas, I always had confidence that after football, I had a chance. You know, I was like a point at T-Ring. I made sure I graduated. I made sure I walked across the stage. And I feel like I'd probably be able to get a job anywhere doing anything. So that even kind of gave me the confidence. Go ahead and try to start a business or something. Like, you know, go for it. You know, you're young, go for it. One of the things that came up was a barbecue restaurant I was able to invest in. And so I did that for a while, and then trying to help find ways to help that business grow, and end up into a food truck and ran the food truck, and that added to the business. I moved on from the restaurant and actually got a little more involved in the food truck, invested in that a little bit more, and kind of put myself into it, and my father helped me out, kind of maintaining the skill set to learn what it takes to build those things, and
right,
kind of put myself in and ventured out on my own, and I started building them and you know, steady growing it, and been going for a while. It's 7.5-8 years now.
Wow.
Time flies.
Wow.
But yeah, so I just, you know, custom building them and putting them out, and that's been pretty cool. And it's pretty cool. Not, you know, they say football guys after sports kind of hit a statistic category, and I mean, I always felt like, you know, believe in yourself and take a chance, you know, and go for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did with this business.
How would you say the business has been affected by this pandemic?
Well, I say it's definitely been affected by it. You know, like orders that I've had, and I know other builders that have had, and, you know, people looking to make some investments and kind of, you know, create some other supplemental incomes. And these humans, that's what they're good for. You know, they can help, you know, add some money to your bottom line. And so a lot of people pulled out and kind of backed out and kind of holding on to their investments and, you know, different things like that. Got us wondering, you know, what the market is. But at the same time, there's a lot of restaurants that are kind of struggling here, and maybe downsizing. Food trucks may just be a way for them to maintain, keep going, and kind of get back to where they once were. So I'm having an optimistic outlook on it. But right now, you know, if I had you know, a bunch of them built, like the dream I always had was having a dealership, you know, having 5 or 10 of them built ready to go. Person can come in and rent them or buy them straight up, you know. It's been just me, you know, don't have any partners, investors, or anything like that. But, you know, at this point, I've been thinking about those kind of things, you know, putting stuff like that together and just finding different ways to be creative. You know, sitting down, I kind of started to look and see what, you know, my friends and my network and different things that I can do. And I enjoy the service business. I enjoy the food business, you know. Yeah, I think there's some things working in that realm that I may keep pursuing.
Yeah, I would think with the problem of restaurants not being able to fully open, the food truck shouldn't come back, you know, more quickly maybe after this is all over. You think that could be the case?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. You know, I think it could be a good thing on that end. So we'll see. Only time will tell. But I know right now, you know, a lot of people are holding on what they got, and which makes a lot of sense. And you know, with this COVID thing going on, people are really trying to figure out a way to just go to the grocery store or stuff similar. You know, just simple everyday things. You know, I got a friend of mine that's the CEO and president of Brothers Produce, and we golf. And you know, about 6 months ago, I was messing with them. You know, they deliver to grocery stores and restaurants and hotels, but not like directly to, you know, or they don't like. I would have a third party to get it the price that they get it for, basically. And so I'm like, you know, how could I figure out a way to get that product off of your dock and straight to people?
Right.
Like, hey, that makes sense.
You can do it. So, you know, we came up with this idea of these produce boxes. So I bought the boxes from Brothers Produce. You know, they're a family-owned business, been around East, there in Houston, Austin, Dallas. You know, hundreds of trucks, refrigerated trucks on the road. And so we come up with a deal where, you know, I'll get these produce boxes, and I kind of created a website, and it's formed to neighborhoods.com. And what I'm planning on doing with that is trying to get fresh food and fresh vegetables into the families and neighborhoods that I know of, anybody that could, you know, benefit them. So right now I just created this box on this website, and whenever someone purchases an order, I'm doing pickup locations. So I'm trying to create like co-op, almost virtual co-ops, or like farmers markets, but
okay.
A person to kind of just pull up. I'll have these refrigerated trucks out. You know, they pop their trunk or their back seat. You know, I have people with nasty gloves on, and they just load you up, and you roll out. You know, and you got fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, straight from the farm at the cost of, you know, a market, so to speak, wholesale, so to speak.
You know, I
like a happy grocery store.
It's like a win-win for everybody, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it's a model, and farmers need it too, don't they?
You know it.
It's a lot of stuff going to waste right now. So I just feel like this would be one. I know the guy with Brothers, and I know, you know, this has affected him, and they've had to lay off quite a bit. But you know, making these boxes and stuff like that, a lot of people. And then a lot of these, you know, food pantries and, you know, food banks, you know, the produce don't really last that long. They can't get it out fast enough. You know, it's just
That's right.
piles of waste piling up.
Before we let you go, how often do you get back down our way? And we haven't talked to Vince in a while. I know you still talk to him. How's VY doing?
This is like the best I've seen my brother in a while. You know, he's working with an engineering firm. And so, you know, they're doing, you know, right-of-way acquisition, and doing bridges, lines. You know, they got a contract in Waco to do a bridge. They just got another contract from DOT. So this engineering deal, I mean, he really likes it. Who would have thought him working with you know, engineer, but
you never know.
He's happy.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know, you know. I mean, he's doing great. Like, I'm so happy. I know he loves university. We love him.
It's been great having you on, man. You create a lot of special memories for us, and we enjoyed reliving them, and I'm glad you're doing well.
On Second Thought.
That'll do it for episode 181 of On Second Thought. Apologize for some of the technical difficulties with Selvin Young. It was a little choppy in parts, but it was good content. We appreciate your patience on that. For the Duck Kirk Bowles, I'm Cedric Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play. We'll be right back.